Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
If it's Wednesday, shifting winds and turning tides in the battle for control of Congress, what last night's election results tell us about the changing political environment for November. Two of the night's biggest winners join me in just a moment. Plus, the president announces a new plan to forgive billions of dollars in student loan debt as the White House looks to shore up its political support from young voters. We'll have the details on the plan and this policy ahead. And Ukraine marks its Independence Day today on the six-month anniversary of Russia's invasion of the country, which the Kremlin marks with fresh rocket attacks. The latest from the ground and the U.S. response. Happy hump day and welcome to Meet the Press Now. I'm Chuck Todd. Electoral politics in America have been shifting dramatically and suddenly in recent weeks. We've been chronicling it here for you almost daily. And last night's election results put a big fat exclamation point on that shift that we've been noting. Last night, the Democrat Pat Ryan won a special election to Congress in a swing district that's being viewed as a bellwether for November, in part because voters in New York's 19th congressional district correctly picked the presidential winner in 2012, 2016, and again in 2020, meaning it's an Obama-Trump-Biden district. And with 11 weeks to go until the 22 midterms, Ryan's two-point margin of victory last night is virtually identical to President Biden's margin in the district in 2020, suggesting the winds aren't blowing nearly as strong in the Republican Party's direction as they were pre-Dobbs decision. We're going to speak to Pat Ryan in just a moment. And while it's not a perfect indicator of political moods, this year's special elections have shown a clear shift in our national politics. And they do, we talk about reading the tea leaves, these are the leaves that we mean when we say we read the tea leaves. From before the Supreme Court decision overturning Roe to after. Before the decision, in two early June races in California and Texas, Republican candidates did better than President Trump did in those districts in 2020. You see it right there. And you're thinking, okay, that's a sign. It's what we saw in 2017, which led to 2018. But in the four special elections that we've held after the Dobbs decision, it's been the Democrats who have been overperforming Biden and Republicans underperforming Trump. Similar or better margins, as you can see there on our chart. It is a line of demarcation. There's no doubt about it. And another indication of the changing national mood, turnout. In yesterday's Florida Democratic gubernatorial primary last night, turnout matched its 2018 level. And that was a year Democrats had their best midterm performance of the decade. Never mind, you had a really hot primary on the right as well that cycle. And yet Florida, not as hot of primaries, still had some big turnout. And Charlie Crist, he won, and he won going away last night. We're going to talk to him in just a few minutes as well. Folks, the issue of abortion has clearly shaken up everything about November. It's something we forecast if it happened, and wow, it did. First off, it has clearly fired up Democrats. In March, before Dobbs, Republicans had a whopping 17-point edge over Democrats on voter enthusiasm in our NBC News poll. It's why we said a red wave was building. But now that gap has all but disappeared. It's down to 2 points. More like presidential level in an even-Steven coin flip election. Both parties are operating at a high level of intensity heading into November. To be sure, Republican turnout has been very strong as well. But the red wave that some analysts were expecting now looks like it's got a pretty strong blue undertow, thanks to the abortion issue. Pat Ryan won last night after openly campaigning on the abortion issue, placing lawn signs that said, "Choice is on the ballot." And well, it clearly was worth 2 points at a minimum. Joined now by the new Democratic congressman-elect from that district, which is technically disappearing in a couple of months. It's Pat Ryan, the winner of that. Congressman-elect, it's good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Chuck.
So a simple question that a lot of swing district Democrats are going to be asking you. Did you win because of abortion?
We won because this was a referendum on freedom. The abortion issue and the attack on women's reproductive rights is representative of this broader multi-front thrust by increasingly extreme Republican Party to rip away fundamental rights and freedoms. And when that happens in our country, Americans of all parties stand up, like we saw in Kansas and we saw last night here in New York. And I think that momentum is certainly going to build and carry forward.
When you were out there talking to voters, you were obviously leading on what you are classifying as a freedom issue, which abortion rights fits under. What did you say to the voter that said, hey, but, you know, I don't like all the spending Democrats are doing. It impacted inflation. What's your response on that?
What I heard, and we talked about both extensively, both the rising costs and the economic pressure people are feeling and the direct attacks on freedom and democracy. And people want and need both. They desperately need economic relief. And to be able to campaign in the closing weeks of this critical special election and talk about the CHIPS Act, to talk about the PACT Act, especially, you know, as a veteran, to talk about the Inflation Reduction Act, specifically lowering prescription drug prices, was hugely impactful. And I think played a major role as we deliver at the national level. And as I was able to deliver as a county executive on the ground at all levels of government, we're both helping people in tangible, visceral ways and actually standing up for rights and freedoms that people very much feel are under threat.
Does student debt forgiveness here fit into that for you? Or are you worried that there's backlash at all from some who thinks it's being implemented unfairly?
I think this is one of the things I hear most from people, not just students, but I'm 40, my peers and colleagues and those older. This is another place where we can provide immediate tangible relief, lift some of that weight that people are feeling on their shoulders. I'm very proud to support the president's proposal. And I think this will make a huge difference in people's lives. There's just so much stress and anxiety. And this would, as we heard the president say, affect tens of millions of people immediately.
What would you like to be able to have as an accomplishment before you essentially campaign in a neighboring district? I guess it's neighboring. It's mostly the same district. But you're on the ballot again in November for a different district. What would you like? Can you get anything done in 60 days that you think will mean something to your constituents?
I think there's a lot we can deliver in terms of some of these big pieces of legislation we talked about. Getting funding flowing from the bipartisan infrastructure bill is going to be huge for this district, especially broadband. And one of the most important fights in this district, our VA Medical Center at Castle Point, in the heart of this district, is under threat under the recent Air Commission recommendations. I have been hammering on this from day one, and we have to not only stop that potential closure, but actually get more funding and resources, especially with the PACT Act being passed, so that, you know, fellow post 9/11 veterans like myself can actually get access to those care and resources in our very rural congressional district. Right now, a lot of people have to drive over 2 hours just to get to the facilities we have.
Tell me about the issue of polarization in this district. You know, some swing districts are tight because there's a strong Republican base and a strong Democratic base. And there's some districts where there's some vacillation. You know, tell me about your swing voters. Are there a lot of them, or is this a place where it's about getting your vote out?
No, I grew up in this community, and the biggest city in the district is where I was born and raised. And there's a lot of people here who are pragmatic, who just want to see results, who are really sick of the division. And I think what people really want to see is some leadership. Someone just willing to say, here's what I believe. I'm not going to pull my punches, not going to poll test, and I'm not going to triangulate it. We're at a moment of real test for our country. And to just stand with some conviction, I think that's how you win people over. They may not agree with you on everything, but they can agree that you have real conviction. And that's a lot of what we did in this campaign. I'm really proud that we did that.
You've been campaigning a while. I'm curious, did you feel the ground shift? You know, there was a lot of hand-wringing about, for instance, President Biden by many Democrats just 60 days ago. And then suddenly you're touting all the different bills he's been able to sign in the last 30 days. Did you feel that ground shift? Is it all Dobbs, or you know, is there something to be gleaned from this?
I said actually to a lot of people, I literally feel the ground shifting a week or two out. And I think nobody believed me. but it really was a combination of guardrails of democracy hit in two seismic Supreme Court decisions, 24 hours apart on guns and ripping away Roe, and then the January 6th hearings. And then we see economic indicators finally encouraging. I mean, gas here is well below $4 now. Yeah. We got to keep bringing that down. All of that coming together, I think, really portends well, not just politically, but just frankly for the morally for the country at a really difficult and divided time.
You know, your opponent is also a county executive from a neighboring county. Before you guys ran against each other, how often did you have to work together?
We text and call every single day, especially during the pandemic, worked very closely together.
It's very unusual in our politics today that two political opponents might actually get along, might actually try to work together. Can you take your act on the road for us?
No, again, it's back to your question about this community and this district. It's just about who's going to deliver. And certainly, I kind of think we're at a moment right now in the country where it's about who are patriots, who are going to step up and say, it's an existential moment for our country. I'm a big fan of yours, Chuck, and watching that polling that you put up on Sunday about threats to democracy being the number one concern. I have felt that on the ground here, building and building and building.
It was a finding that surprised a lot of us at the fact that it shot up to number one. But after watching everything that's been happening, you see many people are picking that may be thinking about the Supreme Court, not necessarily the ballot box as well. I think that means a lot of things for a lot of people anyway. Pat Ryan, Democrat from the 19th Congressional District, now running for re-election in a slightly reformatted version of this district. Appreciate you coming on and stay safe on the trail.
Thank you so much.
Let me turn now to another winner from last night's primaries. It's Democratic Congressman Charlie Crist of Florida. He's going to be taking on incumbent Governor Ron DeSantis in the fall. Congressman Crist, I want to start with, look, your own folks did not think you were going to win by the margin you won by. What do you make of the
Neither
fact?
Did I.
Yeah, I know. That's what I understand. What do you make of the fact you ended up winning by the margin you won by? It what many of us thought was a quote sleepy primary. Didn't seem so sleepy when the results came in.
No, it did not. It was overwhelming, to be honest with you, Chuck, and humbling. I'm very, very grateful to the people of Florida. Honored to be the Democratic nominee for governor. And look forward to the race ahead. But, you know, I was as surprised as anybody. I really was. But I'm enormously grateful. I'm really grateful. I think people are focused on getting a new governor here in the Sunshine State. I think it has everything to do with that. They wanted to get out. They wanted to turn out. And they decided that they wanted me to be their nominee. And I can't thank them enough for it. And I'm looking forward to the race. I know it's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. I know it's going to be challenging. And I'm excited to run it and run through the finish line November the 8th and win this thing.
You can't win this unless you get Republicans to vote for you. And you got a little bit of grief earlier today when you said if those that are with DeSantis, you don't necessarily want their vote. You want to clarify what you meant by that?
Sure. I'm a unifier and I'm going to go after Democratic votes, obviously, independent votes, Republican voters. But if somebody really is a staunch DeSantis supporter, they're probably not going to vote for me anyway, Chuck. But I'm going to give it my all. I mean, I've already visited the villages in this campaign, North Florida an awful lot, which is pretty much more red than the rest of the state. But, you know, I will leave no voter behind. But if people are really staunchly DeSantis, as I said, the odds of them voting for me are probably, you know, slim and none. But there's an awful lot of people that we need to coalesce together from all three separate, you know, perspectives, independent, Republican, and Democratic.
Nikki Fried, I spoke with her last night after she conceded. I asked her if she'd be open to being your running mate. She eagerly said she would. I'm curious, is she on your short list? And I've seen some other candidates. Who are you? Okay, I understand you may have misheard me at the beginning. Nikki Fried last night said she'd be eagerly take the number two slot if you offered it. What are you looking for in a running mate?
Somebody good, somebody that can step into the role if necessary, God forbid. But, you know, I'm looking for a good running mate who's excited about the race, I think that it's important that we have somebody that excites the ticket. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of on a ticket in another way with Val Demings, which mm-hmm. I'm enormously excited about. I got to tell you, she's amazing. We had a wonderful conversation last night. Also had a wonderful conversation with Nikki last night, and mm-hmm. I'm very grateful to her for her immediate support and endorsement. And, you know, I'm just excited about this campaign. I know Florida deserves better than what yeah. we have, Chuck. I mean, we have a divider in chief as our governor right now, and he attacks LGBTQ kids. He attacks African-American congressional districts, you know, senior citizens who like to vote by mail, like my mom and dad, making it harder for them to do that. He's anti-democracy. He's anti African-American. He's anti-women and their right to choose. I mean, it's just it's unbelievable how far to the right this guy has gone in pursuit of the Republican nomination for the White House in 2024. And I think he's miscalculated by doing that. I really do.
You talked about Val Demings being part of the ticket.
Florida's purple, yeah. Like my tie.
I still believe it is myself. Not a lot of people in Washington seem to agree these days. You talked about Val Demings, Orlando, your Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
My guess is you need South Florida to round out this ticket. A lot of people credit DeSantis' 34,000 vote victory to Jeanette Nunes over helping him overperform in Miami-Dade. Is that fair to say that when you look at rounding out the ticket, South Florida is your target?
Well, it's certainly important. There's no question about that. I mean, you know, that's where the lion's share of the votes are, at least on the Democratic side. Broward is the county that has the most Democratic voters. Miami-Dade's huge, Palm Beach County, obviously, too. But it's not, you know, specifically going to be that. I'm trying to keep an open mind and make a wise decision. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure where they're going to be from yet.
Money. You know, I say this in the past, you've not had issues raising money, but you're facing a nominee that's got an enormous war chest and it only continues to grow.
Yeah.
No one's expecting you to match him dollar for dollar. Can you match him 50 cents to the dollar?
Oh, I believe so, without a doubt. Yeah, I mean, the response we've gotten today, Chuck, is amazing. You know, we're approaching $1 million today, and I'm overwhelmed by it. And if anybody's watching, go to charliechris.com and help us out.
But even if you raise $1 million a day,
you know, $50 checks.
Charlie, if you raise $1 million a day, you still only have half his war chest, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you said 50 cents on the dollar.
Yeah, fair enough.
and we're not going to have to match them. I mean, you understand this. You're a pro. You know this. So I've been elected statewide 3 times in Florida. It's not like I have to build name ID. So right. That, thank God for that. But we have to be able to protect and defend me and what I actually do believe in. And we have to be able to make sure that we can expose who he is. And I think we're going to have the resources to do both. I really have that confidence, and I'm not afraid of it, and I look forward to it.
I saw
and
that
I think it's going to be fun.
The
really
Democratic
do.
Governors Association put out a video, not an ad. Are they going to fully help you, the DGA?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any question. Listen, Governor Cooper is a friend. We were both attorneys general at the same time, got to know each other well then. Mm-hmm. I think the world of them. I know they're going to be there. I had a great talk with Jamie Harrison last night. They're all in. We're going to be fine. We're going to be just fine. And I look forward to President Biden coming down here, and I will welcome him with open arms. And we talked about that a while ago.
Well, I was just going to say, Democratic president in hugs. It's now an asset these days for you politically, right? Right, Charlie? The infamous Obama hug.
Well, it is. I loved hugging Obama, and I will love hugging Joe Biden.
All right.
You know, look what's happening. I mean, you know, inflation's on the way down. Thank God. Gas prices are on the way down 70 days in a row now. Thank God for that, for the economy. What he's done with Ukraine. I wear this pin every day. You know, the American mm-hmm. flag and the Ukrainian flag. A place that's fighting for democracy. Joe Biden's led us so well. Brought NATO together. Expanded it. The EU. I don't know if anybody could have led the way he's led. I'm very proud of him. He's my friend.
Congressman Charlie Crist, the nominee for governor for the Democratic Party, will be watching. It's Florida. We know it's going to be close. Stay safe in the trail.
Yeah, you're a Floridian. You know. Appreciate it, Chuck. Thanks for your time.
We got a lot more analysis of last night's primaries, what it all means for November on today's episode of the Chuck Toddcast. Steve Kornacki and I geek out on all of it. New York 19, the Senate map, you name it. We're going to do a little bit of that with the panel after the break as well. Plus, we got some breaking news from the White House. and more details on the president's plan to cancel some student loan debt, what it means for borrowers, taxpayers, and voters. You're watching Meet the Press now.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite, too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.
Welcome back. In a move that will impact approximately 45 million Americans who hold federal student loan debt, the White House announced today that the Department of Education plans to forgive up to $10,000 in some federal student loans and up to $20,000 if a student went to school on a Pell Grant. President Biden spoke about the decision earlier this afternoon. He highlighted the heavy financial burden that has been placed on students and former students.
Here's the deal. The cost of education beyond high school has gone up significantly. The total cost to attend a public four-year university has tripled, nearly tripled in 40 years. Tripled. An entire generation is now saddled with unsustainable debt in exchange for an attempt, at least, at a college degree. The burden is so heavy that even if you graduate, you may not have access to the middle-class life that the college degree once provided.
Let me check in with our senior White House correspondent, Kelly O'Donnell. And Kelly, you know, what's interesting is this isn't being universally embraced, even in the Democratic coalition. You have progressives wanting more, and you have some that are questioning whether this is good policy. Jason Furman, an Obama-Biden veteran economist, not thinking it was a good idea. How's the White House handling a lot of this backseat driving?
Well, some of it is to say that the president is acting on a campaign promise and to be able to put it in that compartment. That's very helpful in midterm season to say a promise made and a promise kept. And some of it is to try to encourage those who are affected by this to now do some homework and to find out how they can go about taking advantage of the various aspects of this program. It doesn't happen automatically. You have to apply for it. There are other elements of this where loans can be forgiven down the line, where people who've done public service types of work can get some other kinds of benefits. So there is a lot of complicating factors here. And the president even said that he knew that there would be a lot of commentary for and against this. And certainly don't even add in the Republican side of it, where they're saying this is unfair and putting a burden on taxpayers and could even increase inflation. So what the White House is saying is this is a way to try to address a real problem that is affecting many families. And they believe they're trying to take some steps, maybe modest and incremental, toward the structural problem of higher education that is very costly. Mostly, it is about trying to relieve some pain at a time when they know people are considering who they're going to vote for in the coming season and to follow through on something the president said he would do. That simple.
And if you're somebody who just is going to get this relief, you're probably going to be a fan of Biden for life. For whatever it's worth. That's probably something you ought to point out. We ought to point out here. Anyway, Kelly O'Donnell at the White House for us. Kelly, thank you. Let me bring in my panel, Washington Post congressional reporter Mariana Sotomayor, former Democratic congressman from New York, Joe Crowley, and Republican strategist and former NRCC communications director, Matt Gorman. Joe, I'm going to start with you in a conversation that we had this morning with my first read team. And we were like, you just had a big night.
Mm-hmm.
it is pretty clear you got one issue driving interest in this election and getting Democrats all fired up. So is today the day to do student debt?
Well, I don't think it changes.
Okay.
I still think that Democrats are fired up as a result of the turns last night in New York in 19, mm-hmm. that special election. I think there's a lot to learn about that race, and you delved in with Pat Ryan yourself. Look, this is a promise made, a promise kept. Mm-hmm. This was not something...
It's a good policy, though?
Well, you know, I think it's part of the problem. I think it's addressing, for some people, they're overwhelmed. You know, they've gone through COVID. They mm-hmm. had difficulty, struggles getting work and getting jobs, paying for a mortgage or rent, paying for food, paying for their college education. You know, I had the fortune of going to a public university, City University of New York. My brothers and sisters didn't. They had debt for most of their lives, you know. And even for kids who go today, or young people who go today, for public colleges are accruing debt mm-hmm. that really wasn't meant for them. You know, a public college was the mm-hmm. opportunity to give those folks a chance that they were denied in going to private schools.
You know, Matt, look, I've seen the Republican pushbacks on inflationary, you know, unfairness and things like that. But ultimately, you expect to be able to somehow channel anger and make this hit? Or is it probably... It's a one-day hit.
It's funny.
You see where I'm going?
Yeah, I do. I had a Republican operative texting me on the way and really feeling bullish about this, and I was kind of, I'm skeptical. I don't think
it'll feel good in the moment on cable and Twitter, but
exactly. Yeah. If you're going the polls on against student loan relief, you're a very interesting person, and I don't mean that regardless of whether
you. Look, I saw Marco Rubio put out a statement and saying, "Hey, I've got an idea."
Yeah.
He wants to waive all interest. You know. I thought if you're going to critique, you better have your own idea. Right. He actually had one.
Yeah, you're right. And I think also, too, like there's a question on the right about the constitutionality of it. And there's a question whether or not Biden actually might want this to get struck down and run against it as a little bit of a cudgel.
Hey, anytime they can bring the courts into this, I think that is a good day. Mariana, let's change to your beat, which is I felt like if this morning, if I were on a Republican campaign and I were having my messaging call, it's like, all right. Gas is under $4 and abortion is killing us. What are we going to do?
Yeah. You know, I think it's too early. I haven't heard Republicans yet say, oh, my gosh, this abortion issue is really killing us. I think they're still holding on to the inflation argument. But the one thing that I have heard from them is if gas prices start to go down, because that is what people are seeing every day.
And they are.
Every day. And if that you start to see prices maybe go down in the grocery store, that's when we can start to worry. I don't think that Republicans feel like all of a sudden they're going to lose a ton of seats. I think they, at least in the House, think they're going to win the majority. But it might not be the 20, 30 seats that they were thinking even a couple weeks ago. It might be closer to 10, maybe 15.
What would you be taking away, Matt, from what, you know, clearly the abortion position is a problem for the Republican Party. How would you advise a candidate to deal with it?
I would say, and we've talked about this a lot, I think in that race, you cannot ignore the issue. Molinari tried to ignore the issue. He didn't try and rebut it. Again, I'm not saying you run on it, but you have to have and talk about how Pat Ryan doesn't want any limits on it. You can't ignore it and just try and silo yourself on inflation. And to Mariana's point, I talked to folks. Dobbs is firing up the Democratic base to state the obvious. And if you look at wave years, the party in power's base mm-hmm. stays home.
Right.
That is not going to be the case this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's no wave, or actually, I argue, Republicans are fired up.
Yeah.
But so are Democrats now.
Yeah.
This feels like a presidential debate.
You see the enthusiasm on the Democratic side really rising now mm-hmm. at a key moment. You know, this is not 6 months ago. This is just before the elections here. And I think it's sustainable. I think you're going to see this happen. So I do think, look, we still have history against this in mm-hmm. terms of running in the first off-year election. The party to become a president loses seats historically. But this could be one of those years where, you know, things happen.
I guess the one thing I wonder is I look at that retirement list that the House Democrats mm-hmm. have. And it's like, you know, it's funny. Nobody is sitting here saying, well, Democrats can hold the House. Like, nobody is making that. What the environment would actually have to shift even further for that to happen.
But I certainly think that in terms of the numbers game right now, where mm-hmm. we were looking at a 2010. I don't think we're looking at 2010 right now. And you just never know, Chuck. You just don't know what's going to happen. There are 220 seats in the House that have better numbers than New York 19. Hmm. That's a big deal. And so I think, you know, that's more than the majority. That's more than you need.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think even if you look at those other special elections that took place, Democrats didn't win them. but we cut the margins dramatically. Mm-hmm. So that cannot be ignored. This is something that's really happening.
Yeah, Matt, are we going to look, if it's a disappointing night in November, are we going to basically look at Dobbs and the entire summer as win this election? When if Republicans blow this, it's been blown in the summer.
Yeah. No, I mean, you look back June 1st, we were riding pretty high. 30, 40 seats was pretty bullish and pretty, I think, would be a good expectation. Now, you're right. It's 10 to 20. And I think we're looking at two battlefields. There's one tranche of seats that is plus one, plus two, plus three Trump, and same on Biden on the other side. There's a big gap, and then there's Biden 7 to 10. That seven
you think
to
those
10,
7 to 10s are gone?
After last night, that is a bigger stretch than it was, say, 3 months ago. Yeah.
So does that mean those California races suddenly, Republicans may not spend as much money as they planned?
It's possible. I mean, that is exactly those seats that are the ones that I have heard that they were like, okay, those were gettable. We could at least get those that were plus eight Biden. Mm-hmm. Now it doesn't seem like that could maybe happen. And Democrats, especially right before August recess, have gone onto the campaign trail to try and make a difference between them and Republicans, not just by saying, here's all the legislation that we passed. It was difficult to get there, but we are actually keeping promises on prescription drugs, on climate. Now student loans, they can actually go out and say that as well to amp up that already energized progressive base. And what they're trying to do is say, and what are Republicans promising you? Yeah, they're talking about inflation. They're talking about the economy, but they're also promising to just impeach Merrick Garland, investigate the Biden administration. They're not actually going to work for you. And here's the laundry list of things we've done.
You know, in our word cloud, Matt, the number one thing on the right among Republicans that want to carry protest sign was impeach Biden. That's actually not what you want to campaign on, is it?
No, not at all. And I think drawing lessons from 2018, when I know it well, when I was running the comms for the House committee, Democrats were very measured, and their recruits are very measured when how they talked about Trump and how they dealt with Trump. It was health care. You know, I think Republicans have to keep.
In fact,
focus
you were trying to
that.
Stir the pot, and I say, yeah, meaning energy. Anytime you heard somebody say the word impeach, hey, look, they
exactly.
want to impeach.
Oh,
you tried
yeah.
to use it as a cudgel, didn't
Absolutely.
You?
We wanted that conversation. Yeah. That was a boon for us. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so. Now, I mean, is it worth sort of saying, look what these guys are going to do? They're going to sit there and do that. Is it worth running on that, or do you just stick to abortion?
I think the reality is that the Supreme Court decision has had real effect on American lives. Mm-hmm. You heard the story of 10-year-old girls or 16-year-old girls. They're not isolated. There's more that happens.
There's one about a 19-year-old girl in South Carolina.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like story after story.
The extremes on either side of any issue are tenuous to begin with. But you see this happening now where Democrats see this as a real opportunity because it's affecting people's lives. It's not baiting people on race or yeah. sexual orientation or the other issues that divisiveness the Republicans have been doing. It's uniting people. That's what I see happening, and Republicans as well, and supporting it.
Can I just say, in the last week, you have seen Democrats, both members and also these different organizations, the DCCC, even the last 24 hours, talking about freedoms. It's not abortion. You
Pat
literally
Ryan.
Just
right.
asked. And
yeah.
his first answer
freedom.
Was, this was about freedom. Yeah. And that seems to be the new message for Dems because they're saying they're going to take away your freedom. They started here. Here's everything else.
Boy, how do you feel about the Democrats taking freedom away from the conservatives?
That, you want to talk about word clouds?
And
that's, I think, I mean, going back to 2018 special elections, these are nice little testing grounds for messages, yeah. for all these little things, and you get insights. Even if you lose, which Democrats did in 2018, to a couple of them, you get insights, and that could be an insight.
In fact, really quick, Florida, you're an active politician every now and then, I guess. Well, I'll accuse you of that since you ran for office. Attacking your opponent for having too much ambition, which is what Chris is going to do with DeSantis. He wants to hurry up and run for president. How much does that matter to voters?
I think it's marginal. I don't think it's that big a deal. I don't think people really held it against me that I wanted to rise in
right.
House leadership. It may be that you become too distant from your state.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what DeSantis has to maybe be concerned about. He's not the Florida candidate anymore. He's the national candidate.
Right.
If used, you know, effectively amongst other issues, it's one of those issues that can be used effectively,
yeah.
but somewhat limitedly.
Yeah, it feels like more of a fundraising gimmick at the end of the day, which this is the way the game is played, as mm-hmm. someone told me. It's about can you go viral and get somebody to give you enough money right. to do it. Mariana Sotomayor, Joe Crowley, Matt Gorman, thank you all. Up next, thousands are dead, millions are displaced, countless more lives have been impacted. Today marks the 6 months anniversary of the start of the war in Ukraine. And it also is the country's Independence Day. We're on the ground in Kyiv after the break. Welcome back. Talk about an emotional day if you're a Ukrainian. They are marking two anniversaries, 31 years of independence from the Soviet Union and 6 months since a hot war with Russia began. Ukrainians observed a subdued celebration today in Kyiv, a city still on edge despite Russian troops' withdrawal from the city itself months ago. President Zelensky commemorated Ukraine's independence by paying his respect at the memorial honoring Ukrainians killed during the 2014 uprising that led to the ouster of the country's Russian-backed president. And in a pre-recorded video, he declared that Ukraine had been reborn and that a new nation had emerged when Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th. Zelensky, though, also warned today that Russia may unleash brutal strikes against Ukraine. And the U.S. has also said it has information that Russia may be preparing to ramp up its assault on Ukraine's infrastructure in the coming days. That warning came as he announced that at least 21 people were killed and about 50 people injured in a rocket attack on a train station in central Ukraine, making that intelligence warning come to life. Josh Letterman is on the ground for us tonight in Kyiv, where it is nightfall. And Josh, put everything of today in perspective, but tell us what happened, what more we can learn about this Russian attack on a train station.
Yeah, well, it targeted this train station in the Dnipro region of Ukraine, in central Ukraine, where we were just 2 days ago. And according to Ukrainian presidential officials, the death toll has now risen to at least 21 people, including one 11-year-old child who, according to President Zelensky, was buried in the rubble, Chuck. There were multiple rail cars that were on fire. Those fires have now been put out. But we haven't seen a strike that has killed this many Ukrainians in weeks, Chuck. And this is exactly what President Zelensky was warning about, what Ukrainians were on alert for today as they celebrate their Independence Day and mark 6 months of war, that Russia would do something exactly like this to try to mar the occasion and to remind Ukrainians across the country that they remain vulnerable to Russian strikes, even as the Russian offensive here has really seemed to stall in the last few weeks. And we've seen President Zelensky today addressing the Security Council and saying, look, the fact that Russia is not won this yet does not mean that Russia has lost this yet, and that the world community cannot take its eye off the ball here, that if this becomes a frozen conflict, that is something that is really destructive to Ukraine's future. They don't want people to say, okay, Russia seems to have stalled out, so it's okay to move on to other topics. And that's why it was so important to see Western nations like the US, like the UK, and others committing new military support today to Ukraine, using this occasion very specifically of the Independence Day to make clear that some of that Western support will be continuing to Ukraine.
Well, and speaking of Western support, we saw Boris Johnson walk around Kyiv today and an unannounced trip on there. Josh, do we expect any other Western leaders to show up really quick?
Well, speaking of Boris Johnson, he is a folk hero here. People love that guy here because he has been so outspoken in support of Ukraine. We also saw the Polish president Duda here in the last 24 hours or so. And so we do expect to see more and more leaders coming to make sure that they display their support. But we're also hearing from people saying, where's Joe Biden? He has not paid a visit here. The U.S. has said there are security issues related to that. And obviously, Jill Biden did come here. But so far, President Biden has not paid a visit to Ukraine.
He has not. All right. Josh Letterman in Kyiv for us. As always, sir, thank you. And please stay safe. We're going to have a bit more on this war's grim milestone and the U.S. response with the United States former ambassador to Ukraine, Bill Taylor, right after this. Welcome back. As the war in Ukraine now enters its seventh month, the Biden administration is preparing to send yet more military aid to Kyiv with an announcement on a nearly $3 billion package of weapons and equipment coming as early as this week. The package includes radars, missiles, drones, and rockets. But some of the systems are still being developed, which means Ukrainian troops may not have access to them for months, and actually in a few cases, perhaps years. Joining me now, the ambassador, former ambassador to Ukraine, Bill Taylor. He, of course, was the ambassador under George W. Bush and then again came back to some duty there. He's also vice president of Russia and Europe at the U.S. Institute of Peace. Bill, it's good to see you.
Thank you, Chuck. It's good to be here.
All right, let's talk big picture here. The fact that this war is entering the seventh month And as a friend of mine said, this is Russia. And they haven't been able to win this war after 7 months. They're never going to win this war. Is that too simplistic of analysis?
It's not too simplistic because they are having a hard time. Mm-hmm. Putin doesn't have the soldiers. His economy is gradually failing. The sanctions are gradually having an effect.
Not happening as fast as anybody
not
wishes.
As happy. Yeah. I would love to have had it. Yeah. I thought it would be faster, but they're having an effect. And that's having an effect on people, on Russians. Mm-hmm. There are some 80,000 dead and wounded Russian soldiers who are coming back to their communities either to be buried or to convalesce whose families are not pleased about this. Their families haven't been told this is a war. You can't even call
They're still calling it, what are they?
Special military operation. Yeah. Right. And you go to jail if you call it a war. So he's worried. Putin's worried about the effect on domestic politics.
So it's that backdrop that I got to ask you about the, I guess we'll call it a terror attack or the bombing of his ally, which turned out to be the daughter, not Putin's brain, as some people refer to as it
Dugin.
Duginin.
Yeah,
yes.
Dugina is and Dugin.
And which is either there's terrorist attacks happening against Putin and his regime in his capital city, which would scare the you-know-what out of a lot of people at the Kremlin, or this is a false flag. Are we going to be able to get to the bottom of this?
So the FSB says that, so the police and the security services in Russia, they said they got to the bottom of it in 24 hours.
Yeah, which, of course, the faster that you get to the bottom of it, the less you believe.
The less you believe. Yeah. And so there is this suspicion by even Russians that maybe the FSB, the Russian security services, had something to do with
why?
It.
Why? What would be the motivation?
The motivation would be President Putin has a hard time mobilizing people against Ukraine, mm-hmm. mobilizing Russians in favor of this war. If he can show that if he can make it clear or if he can make the case that the Ukrainians are killing heroes, and she wasn't mm-hmm. quite a hero, she wasn't that well known, her father was better known, but she was an opponent of Ukraine.
Right.
If he can make the case that the Ukrainians attacked her, this 29-year-old mm-hmm. woman, maybe he can whip up support for a broader mobilization, which he can't do now.
But I assume the scarier fact, if you're Putin, would be, what if it's fellow Russians who don't like the rhetoric that's being spewed by these people and don't like this ideology and have, unfortunately, we see it in our country, domestic political violence, unfortunately think, well, I'm going to take matters into my own hands.
He has to worry. It turns out that there are some claims of responsibility by some organizations, some groups no one's heard of before, National Republican Movement, that are Russians, that are opposed to Putin, that are opposed to this war, and they claim responsibility for this assassination. No one gives that great credibility, but nonetheless, people got to, the Russians and Mr. Putin got to worry about this.
I ended our setup there with our correspondent in Kyiv, Josh Letterman. He noted Boris Johnson has become a folk hero in Kyiv. They love the fact that he's been with them, been there twice now. President of Poland has been there. That's not surprising. And he said quite a few folks have wondered, where's Joe Biden? I'll be honest with you. I don't think it's a good idea for Joe Biden to go to Kyiv as a U.S. citizen. But how important do you think it would be to Ukraine for him to visit?
It would be enormous for him to visit. There's no in Ukraine. There's no doubt about that. What's even more important than President Biden showing up is this assistance. I mean, this $3 billion package that he
announced. No one's writing a bigger check than the Americans.
No one near. I mean, Boris Johnson's doing good stuff, and he's showing up. He's also providing some weapons. The Brits are. That's all good. So are the Germans now. So are the Poles. Mm-hmm. But the Americans are there with the real weapons, mm-hmm. and the magnitude of that flow is what the Ukrainians need and what they're getting from the United States.
So while the symbolic visit is nice, as long as the weapons keep coming, this isn't.
As long as the weapons keep coming and even accelerate and get heavier and longer range and higher altitudes, as long as that comes, they can do it.
Where does this war need to be in 3 months as far as the Ukrainian side? Because then we get hit winter, right? We're looking at, approximately another 3 months of hot war?
3 months of hot war. And where they need to be is what they're starting to do now is kind of push back here and there. And they're attacking supply lines with these HIMARS, with these weapons that the United States has provided, and the Germans and the Brits, longer range, that are able to go to the supply lines, ammo dumps, fuel depots, military headquarters, in Crimea in some cases. I don't think it's HIMARS there, but there are other weapons that can get there. And that is having an effect. If they can, if the Ukrainians can start to, which they've begun, to shift the momentum towards them and to push the Russians back towards where they were on the 24th of February, then that would be a great step in the next 3 months.
And then perhaps winter comes and the Russians say, you know what, I'm going to hibernate for winter.
Hibernate for winter, and if they don't have enough soldiers, they may hibernate.
For a long period of time. Bill Taylor, always good to see you.
Chuck, good to have you.
Thank you for coming in and sharing your perspective. And as we mentioned earlier, the president is canceling billions of dollars worth of student loan debt for some borrowers. We're going to dive deeper into the policy and obviously the politics that surround it. You're watching Meet the Press Now. Welcome back. There is no doubt that student debt is a big problem for a lot of Americans. According to the White House, Americans owe more than $1.5 trillion in combined federal student loan debt, split among 45 million borrowers. Acknowledging the issue is one thing. Solving it is quite another. And today we saw a mixed reaction from economists and lawmakers, and even some Democrats, as President Biden announced his plan to forgive up to $10,000 to $20,000 in federal student loans and grants. So to break down the potential impacts of this policy announcement, I'm joined now by Seti Warren, interim director of Harvard's Institute of Politics. He's also our former mayor of Newton, Massachusetts. Mr. Warren, it's good to see you. It was nice to see you a few months ago. I'm glad to have you on the show.
Great to see you again, Chuck. Yes, great to be here.
All right, let me start with, look, I understand the political argument to do this in a number of ways, whether it's a promise made, promise kept, constituency that's loyal, promises that have been made for quite some time, and a system that has felt a bit unfair. But here's the question I have is, today was not, did not get accompanied by, you know, what are we going to do to make sure this doesn't happen to another generation? And I don't think we've done anything to prevent this from happening again. So where do we go from here?
Well, it's a great question, Chuck. First of all, I just want to acknowledge our recent poll, youth poll, showed that 85% of young people wanted some government action in regard to relief for debt. So even though they haven't solved for the future, there's an immediate crisis now that is being addressed, though it was a step. I do believe that we have to take action for the future. There will be disillusionment with the largest voting bloc that we have coming, which is Gen Z, if there isn't that next step of action taken. So there's a lot at stake.
Here's an unintended consequence that I'm curious how you avoid. If University X knows that young students can get this credit and get this debt, can take out a loan, can pay for school, and who knows, the government may relieve it someday, doesn't that incentivize them to keep raising their prices more?
Well, it may, Chuck. I think one of the things that I think was good in this announcement today was the increase in Pell Grants at the federal level. I think that's incredibly important. But at the end of the day, you know, we have to get to a point where there's affordability in higher ed. You know, Harvard is very, very fortunate to have an endowment where it allows for students to graduate debt-free if they want to. So somehow the incentive, when we think about incentives for universities and colleges, when we think about affordability, we should think about both of those things, Pell Grants and the ability for colleges that are not Harvard to allow for their students to graduate debt-free.
Was there a more equitable way to do this? You know, it feels like, so for instance, I know Senator Rubio had one idea that I think would have gotten rid of all interest, would have said, the government won't collect interest on any student loans it makes. First of all, is that idea a good one, number one? And number two, are there other ways that this could have felt like where anybody feels as if, hey, I paid my debt and I didn't get any relief, you know, and that sort of grumbling. Is there any other way this could have been done that would have made everybody feel like it was done with equity in mind?
Possibly not. Look, the data shows this generation is going to struggle with the ability to buy a home, is struggling to actually pay rent, food, transportation. Some intervention, I think, for this generation in particular, you know, had to be done, and it was the right step. I'm not sure you're going to be able to please everyone, but we know with the facts and data on the ground, something there needed to be an intervention similar to this.
What else can be done to control university costs, and why shouldn't some of these universities pay a price for this? You know, they didn't have to go into debt themselves and build all these fancy dorms and then charge it right back to people.
Well, one way to think about it is to look at our state and community college system. You know, over decades, there's been a lack of investment in these institutions that are credible and real. We have to make sure we pay those professors and lecturers. We make sure that they have the infrastructure to help guide students into graduation. For a lot of the institutions that exist today, a lot of students aren't graduating because of economic issues, life issues. So I think that the step would be is to make those investments so there are alternatives and quality alternatives in states and community colleges.
Seti Warren, the director of the Harvard Institute of Politics, former mayor of Newton, Massachusetts, appreciate you coming on, sharing your perspective with us. Thank you.
Thank you. Great to be with you. Thank you, Chuck.
Good to see you, too. Excuse me. Swallowed something on the wrong side of my pipes there. We'll be back tomorrow with more Meet the Press Now. I will be fully hydrated when I do that. NBC News Now coverage continues with Hallie Jackson right now.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.